This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
We're rolling on. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. So much going on, and obviously almost all of it centering around the action in Albany, New York last night, as the two most famous people in their sport put on an unbelievable show. If you didn't watch the game last night, like Bubba, then you missed something that was beyond anything you could have hoped it would be. I thought the best player on the floor for the first 15 or so minutes of that game was Angel Reese. She was unbelievable. So Iowa jumps out front early. Caitlin Clark's knocking down shots. They're knocking down open threes. LSU was not getting back in transition, and Iowa's getting uncontested layups on fast breaks. And Kim Mulkey is furious, and she calls a timeout. And whatever it was that was said in that timeout, everything changes. And the game shifts directly to LSU. And Angel Reese in particular is dominating, but they were so much bigger than Iowa was. They're going inside. Their defense was suffocating. They went on a run, and it looked to me like they were taking total control of the game. And then everything changes when Angel Reese gets hurt. She, you know, blocks a shot, falls into the stands, and aggravates an ankle that she had injured in a game last week or sometime recently, and is hobbling and hopping and just wasn't the same player again. And I don't know, we'll never know how much impact that has on the game, because Iowa might have just made appropriate adjustments anyway. And then so the game is tied at halftime, and it's about as good a basketball game as you could ever possibly hope to watch on any level played by any people. And then the second half starts, and Caitlin Clark just went nuts. She just took over. I'm not old enough to have seen Pete Maravich play, but that's what I imagine it looked like when Pete Maravich played. She just was by so far the best player on the court. No one could do anything about it. She was remarkable, and they hold off LSU. They avenge their loss in the championship last year, and they go on to play Connecticut in the Final Four.
Her ability, her skill is so rare. It's not just that she fills up the box score. It's not just that it looks electric. It's that when you're watching the basketball game, it's like this sort of heliocentric notion. Everything is controlled by her. Everything is controlled by her skill. Every possession is centered on what Caitlin Clark can do. Nobody in the country is a better scorer than she is. Nobody in the country is a better passer than she is. Kim Mulkey's been coaching college basketball every year since 2000. Iowa scored 94 points last night, which was the most a Kim Mulkey coach team had ever allowed in a regulation game. 25 years. Nobody does to her. And nobody does to her teams what Caitlin Clark in Iowa did to them last night. It was a tour de force. And their ability, their game plan to just shoot over top of to that LSU defense that we know last year gave him a hard time. Those adjustments mattered a lot. And the fact that Caitlin Clark has, in my opinion at least, an undermanned team in the Final Four is further evidence of her extraordinary greatness.
So the other side of it, of course, is the two most famous people on that floor were Caitlin Clark, and she goes on and will play in the Final Four. And the other is Angel Reese, who became extraordinarily well-known last year. And we saw when they won the game last year, she was, insert whatever word you want to use, taunting, talking trash to, whatever it is, at Caitlin Clark, pointing at her ring finger, we won the championship, doing that, sort of imitating her you can't see me thing. And that became a thing, and it has remained a thing in the sport, and in most ways a very good thing for the sport, because it brought so much attention in. Some people loved Angel Reese and some people hated Angel Reese, and that is how you get people excited about a sport. A sport that people have not always historically had a significant emotional attachment to. This went a long way towards changing that. But there is a very, very young human being on the other end of all of that conversation. And I thought it was fascinating and somewhat heartbreaking to hear her talk after the game last night. This was Angel Reese.
I don't really get to stand up for myself. I mean, I have great teammates. I have a great support system. I got my hometown. I got my family that stands up for me. I don't really get to speak out on things just because I just try to ignore, and I just try to stand strong. Like, I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time. And I just try to stand strong for my teammates because I don't want them to see me down and, like, not be there for them. So I just want to always just know, like, I'm still a human. Like, all this has happened since I won the national championship, and I said the other day I haven't had peace since then. And it sucks, but I still wouldn't change. I wouldn't change anything, and I would still sit here and say, like, I'm unapologetically me. I'm going to always leave that mark and be who I am and stand on that. And hopefully the little girls that look up to me, and hopefully I give them some type of inspiration that, no, hopefully it's not this hard and all the things that come at you, but keep being who you are. Keep waking up every day. Keep being motivated, staying who you are, staying 10 toes, don't back down, and just be confident.
So that was, you know, difficult to listen to. And I will acknowledge, for the purposes of my thoughts on this, that I have a daughter who is a year and a half older than Angel Reese. So if I sound like I'm talking about this young woman as I would someone who might be my daughter, I am, because that's how old she is. And that's how old I am now, hard as it sometimes is for me to believe. So this is really complicated stuff, because one of the things that comes with great celebrity now, particularly when one is as... I don't know Angel Reese off the floor at all. I've never met her. I've never spoken to her. We had Andrea Carter on television with us this morning saying that her persona off the floor is very different than it is on, that she's mild-mannered and all the rest of that. I don't know her. I don't have any way of knowing that because we don't see it, and neither does practically anybody else. Her on-court demeanor is extremely demonstrative, which is something that we have become very accustomed over the years to seeing in men's sports. And yet we react to it. We as a culture, as a society, react to it very differently when we see it in women's sports. It's just evident if you just follow the way people talk about her, if you follow the way she is covered and discussed relative to the way male athletes who behave in exactly the same way, who talk just as much trash, who are just as demonstrative, on the court and football, basketball, whatever the case may be. So that's complicated stuff. And she has become famous in that way, in a way that very, very few other women ever have before. So she really is kind of walking a path that almost no one can advise her on directly. And that has to be very hard and very challenging. So I asked Marcus Spears about it this morning because he's an LSU guy. And he was talking about, he did a little bit of a sermon, as he called it, on our show for young people out there, young athletes and young people. He has kids who are a little younger than mine, talking about how you must not pay attention to all the stuff that is said about you on social media. You must not allow that to ever influence how you view yourself, because people who are really successful in life aren't sitting there just writing nasty stuff at rich, famous, successful people. And all that is true. And of course, I agree with it in principle. But here's what I've come to learn is the complicated part of that. I used to say that all the time. I used to say that on Mike and Mike all the time. Look, Mike and I were doing this job at a time before there was social media. So we would give out an email address and people would email us stuff, and we would get thousands of emails a day. So I feel like before there was social media, everyone else started getting used to being able to hear from everyone every single day. Mike and I already knew what that was like. So I feel like I have a little more perspective on this than I think a lot of other people who only started hearing regularly from the public when social media came along. I predate that. Mike and I predate that. It's really just a function of our age. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is it is very easy for me and for Marcus and for others to say people like Angel Reese should just ignore that noise. There are two reasons that's easy. Both of them are functions of our age. The first is we're old enough to remember a time when that stuff did not exist. So we recognize that that is a part of the world that can be compartmentalized. I know that the entire world is not in this phone in my pocket. I know that if I choose to just leave that phone in my pocket and walk around and lead my everyday life, none of the things that people are writing to me on there actually matter. They don't impact my world in practically any way. I guess death threats is a whole other thing. And I don't really know how to put that into this conversation, so I won't try to. I'll just say, let's put that aside. But the general run-of-the-mill nastiness that any famous person is accustomed to on social media, it's very easy for me as a 56-year-old man who became, however famous it is that I am, long before there was such a thing as Twitter, to say, hey, there's a whole world out there that doesn't matter, doesn't give a damn about what these people are writing to you on Twitter. There's another even bigger reason why that is significant, and that is because at 56 years old, I have a fully formed sense of myself. I have a fully formed sense of who I am. So candidly, there's almost nothing, there are probably some exceptions, but almost nothing anyone could say to me that would impact how I feel about myself. I've lived my life the way I have. I've accomplished what I've accomplished. I have the priorities I have. I have my family. I've done so many things. My life is fully formed. Myself is fully formed. And so you can write anything you want to me on Twitter. Greeny, you suck. Greeny, you're not funny. Greeny, that, whatever. What do I care? What difference could that possibly make to me? But when you're 21 years old, you aren't that. No matter how much confidence you think you have in yourself, no matter how well-adjusted you are to anything, no matter how together a person you are not a fully formed, you are not a person who has a fully formed sense of self. It's just not possible at that age. And so I can see where that is a lot more, someone who's 21 years old is a lot more susceptible, a lot more vulnerable is the word I'm looking for, to that kind of criticism infiltrating places it does not belong. Like if you are allowing people who do not know you and do not have your best interests at heart to influence the way you feel about yourself, that's a terrible thing. And if you have the ability to not allow it to happen, you should. But that brings us back to the first part of this, which is that if you're 21, and I see this in my own kids, they don't know a world without this. To them, this is real. To Angel Reese, this is the whole world. The whole world, as she has always known it, is what's going on in this phone. I think that is very unhealthy. I think that is a terrible thing for our society and our culture. But that horse is so far out of the barn, it's never going to be caught up to. So what I think doesn't make any difference, people of that generation, inclusive of my children and Hembo, soon to be yours, and people the age of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all the others that were watching play in this NCAA tournament, male and female, that's the world they live in. They've always lived there. They don't know anything else. Cam, that's the way you are. That's how old you are. You don't remember a world where there wasn't all of this. And so to you, this is the world. This is how people judge what they think. What does Twitter say about this? Like, there's a part of me, I have to watch myself to say what I really want to say. Who gives a flying you-know-what Twitter has to say about it? But that's not the way people who were 21 years old think. So I felt sad when I heard that from Angel Reese. If she says that what should have been the crowning achievement and moment of her young life, winning the national championship in college basketball, is a moment after which she has not been happy, that's terrible. I mean, that's a terrible, tragic thing. And it is a signal, I guess, a sign of just where we are in the culture with social media. And I don't know what the solution to it is, but it is not going to be beneficial to the mental health of human beings going forward until we do something different about it. That's my TED talk. Anyone have a thought you want to before I go to a break?
I mean, I would co-sign most everything that you said there. It was heartbreaking to hear Angel Reese say what Angel Reese said. The one thing I will say in addition is I give her enormous credit for continuing to be her and staying true. She became, I think, in some sense, villainous last year after her sort of demonstration at the end of the national championship game, and people hold that against her to this day. And she's continued to just be herself. If these women decide, well, this is how we're going to police ourselves in between these lines, this is how we're going to play our game, this is how we're going to promote our game, more power to them. And I think in some sense, the fact that she became the villain, became the one that had to live that role, in the opposite of Caitlin Clark, wound up pretty seriously having a deleterious effect on her life and on her mental health. And that is a shame. My earnest hope is the same as yours, that as she grows older, she'll realize that the only thing that actually matters are those that are close to her. And so long as she can hold true to that, I have no doubt that she'll be better off for it.
People who actually know you, do not pay attention to criticism from people who do not have your best interests at heart. Constructive criticism is valuable when people in your life, people who care about you, offer criticism. Listen to it because they're trying to help you. Do not pay attention to the criticism of people who do not care about what's in your best interest. Cam, give me a quick thought.
Yeah, the rivalry itself, obviously, as we mentioned, was fantastic for women's sports, fantastic for the game and the game last night and the game last year. But there's obviously a line, and there's just so much more access that anyone has to these athletes and to famous people now than there used to be. Obviously, there are people throughout history, athletes who have dealt with ridiculous amounts of scrutiny and hate and everything, but it's so easy now for people to literally pull out of their pocket and just say something extremely nasty to you just like that, where they didn't have that ability before. And another thing we have to consider is Angel Reese is living in the world of NIL, and a lot of her NIL image is Instagram. She has 2.7 million followers on Instagram and 400,000 followers on Twitter. So a lot of that, you know, she probably has a social media person or something, but a lot of that is she has to promote her brand on Instagram. So it's hard for her to detach herself from how she's growing her brand and making money and developing as a young person and professional while she's being an athlete as well. So it's harder for her to detach than, you know, maybe some other people who aren't as much in that spotlight, in that limelight. And you sweep all that into the generation that me and people younger than me have grown up in, where this is just ingrained in who we are. It's very hard to distance yourself from those voices, even though you should block them out.
That's a good point. Greeny live from the Seaport, brought to you by Grey Goose. Quickly, Hembo trivia.
Group trivia. I'm looking at a list of most combined men's and women's Final Four appearances by school. So the top five cutoff here is 18. So you're going to give me all five schools to reach a combined 18 or more men's plus women's Final Fours. That's the group question.
I like it, and the answer's next on ESPN Radio.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. Hembo Trivia, it's a good question, and the answer is in 30 seconds after this. Reminder that for the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. All right, we like the group trivia, and this is a good question.
I am looking at a list of most combined men's and women's Final Four appearances by school. The top five cutoff, if you will, here is 18. So you're going to give me all five schools to reach a combined 18 or more men's plus women's Final Fours.
All right, so Pineapple Jack and Brandon have been helping us brainstorm this thing here. There's three that we feel very strongly about, and if any of them is wrong, then we have no chance.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm just going to go with them. We're going to start with Connecticut.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So that's first with 30 combined appearances,
yeah, okay.
including this year.
Another one is UCLA.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have 19 all by the men.
So they were closer to the cutoff there. We still feel good about Duke, right, guys? I mean, Krzyzewski, how many Final Fours did he make? He won five championships. It's got to be Duke.
Duke is correct.
Okay, thank God.
The Duke men have 17 and the Duke women have four.
There we go.
I thought the women got in there a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now,
three for three.
We're three for three. So we need two more.
Cam and I are feeling pretty good about Stanford.
You guys are feeling that good about Stanford. How many times did the Stanford men make the Final Four?
I can
only think of once. I remember one time the Stanford men made it.
Definitely like in 98.
The women's tournament only goes back to 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderveer's been there like the whole time, and they've been a powerhouse pretty much the whole time.
I know, but would they have
made 18's a lot.
16 or 15 or 16 Final Fours?
I mean,
that's a lot.
We can go North Carolina. I think North Carolina is our next best option.
I think North Carolina is too. North Carolina, the men have made a ton of
Want to try
Final
them
Four.
First. Let's lock them in just to see.
Which one?
Want to try North Carolina first and lock that in?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we feel communally best about Carolina, right? We feel good about Carolina. Let's go North Carolina.
That's right.
Okay.
So this is what I'll recap here just for a second. UConn is first with 30. Carolina is second with 24. You guys have Duke third with 21 and UCLA fourth with 19. You're just missing number five with 18 combined appearances.
What's the split on UNC, just out of curiosity?
The UNC split is 21-3.
Okay.
21-3 for UNC.
See, most of them are going to be like that because the women's tournament only goes back, the men's tournament goes back 35 long.
Means you want to say Kentucky, doesn't it?
Well, no, I feel like Kentucky's men will have made a lot of Final
Fours.
They're
sitting there. It's very tempting to take them.
I mean, 18. I have no recollection. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. I have no recollection of the Kentucky women being really good. Like, I don't remember that.
But
obviously,
but
Tennessee's women were really good for a really long time. But I don't remember their men ever making the Final Four.
Tennessee won eight titles. So
who did?
Tennessee has won eight titles, right?
Right.
So that's like half right there.
I get it. But you need 10 more Final Fours by them. I don't. Have the Tennessee men ever made the Final Four?
I have zero recollection.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
If so, maybe it's like once. So you would need.
What about some of these other ones, like Louisville, Michigan State?
I don't know. Like Louisville, the men have been there a lot. Michigan State, the men have been there a lot. It's one of them. It's going to be one of them. Bubba has liked Stanford the whole way. But I feel like we're really depending on the women there because I don't think the men have more than like two. We got to pick one.
This is killing me.
What are we thinking here, guys?
I'm saying Stanford. What do you think, Cam?
What do you think, Cam?
I'll go with Stanford, too.
What do you got? But Pineapple Jack, which one would you go with? I would go Louisville. He would go Louisville.
Louisville?
I don't hate Louisville.
He doesn't hate Louisville. I mean, they had Patino. They had Denny Crum.
Are there women good?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know. All right.
Take a shot in the dark.
I'm going to go with Bubba. Because Bubba went to see Larry David last night, we're going to go with Stanford.
And the correct answer is Tennessee.
Oh, no!
Come on. All right, let
me.
We just talked about Pat Summitt.
Yes. The women have 18 Final Fours by themselves.
Pat Summitt is a beast.
Didn't you just give a Pat
I
Summitt
opened
tribute?
The show oh with a God. Tribute to Pat Summitt.
I blame you.
She's watching.
Pat, we're sorry.
I hope she had pride last night. So here's what I hope. I hope wherever she is, Pat Summitt watched the game last night and did not watch the us getting this answer wrong. Oh, that is so disappointing. Like on a level.
No.
By the way, Stanford had 17.
Oh, God.
15 plus 2 for Stanford.
So, but my point is, so you just randomly cut it off at 5, though.
The top 5, yeah. Because if I go to 17, then I have to add 2 more, and then 16, I add another.
Who was the other one at 17?
The Kentucky men.
Oh, my
gosh. You guys
were
all over
this. We were right there.
You guys
Stanford
were all
men
over.
Made it like in like 98 and like in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, they were more recent. 15 for the women. 2 for the men.
All right. So I don't feel too bad about Stanford.
I mean, we did well, but.
You did well.
And I blame Greeny with Tennessee here. I mean, come on. That hurts. That really
it's
hurts.
It's a bad
Sorry,
mess.
Pat.
All right. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial Insurance can protect your small business with over 30 coverage options, an easy-to-use mobile app, personalized discounts, and more. Get a quote in as little as 6 minutes at progressivecommercial.com. Discounts and coverage selections not available in all states or situations. All right, I feel like telling you a funny story, so I'm going to.
Just going to sit back and have a little story time.
Tell me a story.
So, you know, we just had a very serious conversation about social media and the dangers of mental health and all that kind of stuff. So let me try and bring a little smile to your face. Bubba and Cam, I think you will particularly enjoy this story. And you got to tell me how I have to handle this going forward. But I had just a moment of giddiness yesterday. I don't know what came over me. And it led to, I think, a very funny story, but it's going to be kind of a complicated situation for me. So I have been having, apropos of nothing, some problems with my throat. This happens to me from time to time. I get vocal strain. I do 4 hours live every day. And my voice has been bothering me a little bit. So I went to a doctor yesterday to, you know, get a little work done on that. So I'm sitting in the doctor's office waiting to see the doctor. I've been led to the doctor's office by a receptionist who has taken my name and my birth date and all that sort of thing. So now I'm sitting into the room. Another person comes in, a woman, and she is her function. She's going to take my vitals. So she's going to take my temperature. She's going to take my blood pressure. She's going to take my oxygen, you know, and that's it. So, there's not really a lot of one way or another. The point of the story is she's not really looking at my chart and we're not having a very in-depth conversation. But so she does ask me what is the reason that I'm there after all those other things turn out just fine. Oh, she tested me for flu, COVID, and strep, all of which the rapid test came back negative. And so she is asking me why I'm there. And I mentioned to her my throat and she says, well, you know, if it is vocal strain, which you've had a lot, generally speaking, the solution for that is just vocal rest. You need just some vocal rest. And I said, well, unfortunately, that's really not an option for me. I'm a broadcaster. And so she says, oh, where do you work? And I said, I work at ESPN. And she said, oh, my goodness, my husband loves ESPN. I don't watch any sports at all, but my husband loves ESPN. Would he know you? And I said, he might. I said, I host the show that's on in the mornings. She said, oh, okay, that's so exciting. She was very excited by this. And then she left the room. So now I'm still sitting there, Bubba and Cam, and I'm waiting for the doctor to come in. And the door opens again about 90 seconds later, and it's the same woman. And she says to me, I just called my husband. Are you Stephen A. Smith? And I don't know what came over me, but I said, yes, I am. I don't know why. I honestly don't know what I was thinking. It was just like a silly moment. I was looking at my phone. I wasn't really thinking. I thought it would be funny.
To who?
I forgot. I guess just to me. And so I just said, yes, I am. Like, I'm thinking, like, let her call her husband and say, I just met Stephen A. Smith at the doctor's office. I don't know what the hell came over me is what I'm trying to say. But now.
Stolen valor.
I have to go back today because the doctor was not able to see me for a while, and I just didn't feel like waiting. So we agreed that I would come back today, because it's not urgent. Like, I'm living with this. Like, I'm just taking Advil, and it's inflammation, and I might have to go on a steroid, whatever. The point is, I'll go back and see the doctor today. But if I go back, when I go back, mm-hmm. if the same woman is there, she is going to tell the doctor, oh, Stephen A. Smith is here to be seen. Let's get his chart. My point is, like, I now have to go into the doctor's office and explain that I am, in fact, not Stephen A. Smith, who I said I was, for no reason at all. And this is going to be super shady, right?
Yeah.
Like, who goes to a doctor's yeah. office and lies about their name? Somehow, I have. Like, that's the dumbest thing. Again, I'm so... And then... My first thought is, no, I need to correct that. Actually, no, I'm not. But then I realized, well, what is that? What is she going to think of me then? I mistook myself for someone else? Like when she said, are you Stephen A. Smith? And I was like, yes, I am. You can't then say, actually, no, I'm not. Like, I don't even know what to say. So now that's where I am. I have to go back to the doctor's office today, and I may, before I get treated, have to explain to them that I'm not Stephen A. Smith, but I told them I was. Bubba, this is the kind of thing that generally could only happen to me. What is your reaction?
Well, I think the most disappointing thing is it's not the thing that only happens to you, because you basically pulled opposite Hembo, because he did the exact same thing just in a different way when he was at the butcher and someone recognized him and said, are you Hembo? And he said no, which was also an insane response. But the fact that you basically pulled a Hembo... But just they flipped it, the reverse, and you know, they said, are you Stephen A? And you said yes. But, you know, you should never be doing something that Hembo did.
Imagine,
and that's why I'm disappointed in you.
Imagine someone asked Hembo at the butcher, oh, are you Hembo? He said, no, I'm Stephen A. Smith. Also, who is this woman taking your vitals that doesn't have your chart already in front of her?
Your blood type but not your name?
Why doesn't she know your name?
That did come up.
Where was she putting the information into?
She's typing in this chart. She's like, oh, Stephen A. Smith's file here.
She just didn't look at it closely, I guess. I don't really know how else to explain it. I think she had already put that down. What happened was, okay, in the retracing of the steps, she did my vitals, and then she also took the, shoved the swabs up my nose and all that kind of stuff. And
you
that takes
that.
A couple of minutes. So we sort of sat there and chatted during those few minutes. And during that time, a lot of time had passed since last she had looked and written down anything on my chart. You're just waiting, you know, they put the little Q-tips into that little liquid and you're waiting to see if they turn color. I don't even know what it is she's waiting for, but she's waiting to see that, whatever it is. And it turns out they're negative. So by that time, a lot of time had passed since she had looked at it. And it was as she's walking out the door that the conversation turned to me being a broadcaster at ESPN. So that happened, and then she walked out the door, and she was just excited. Like, I think she was excited that she had just met someone that she knew her husband might be excited.
I mean, I got to say, we got to give this nurse a lot of credit, because she refuses to violate any sort of HIPAA law. She won't even look at your chart to see what your name is. She says you're working ESPN. She wanted to find out what your name. She won't even look at it.
Greeny.
She can easily just say what your name is. She won't do that. So, hey, she's following all the HIPAA laws. Good for her.
You're in luck, because often Stephen A. Smith is on the road. I'm looking at First Take. Stephen A. Smith is at Seaport today. You just got to bring him to the doctor with you.
That's what I might have to do.
Sorry, I'm not Stephen A. Smith, but this is.
So this show and First Take will wrap up at the same time. So I think I got to go in there and I got to be like, Steve, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to come to the doctor's office and explain to the woman that you're you and I'm not, and that I just said this. I don't even know what I was thinking. You ever have like a moment come over you where you don't even know why you did what you did? You just did it because you kind of thought it would be funny.
Hearing you squirm through this explanation today is going to be rich, because no one is going to think it's funny except you, and you don't even think it's funny anymore.
Well, I wonder if I violated some sort of rules. Like, you can't lie to a doctor about your name, right? Like, I mean, look, if they asked me to prove that I was Stephen A. Smith, I couldn't.
You certainly couldn't.
No, I couldn't. So I don't know. Like, I get a lot of that. Like, I get Stephen A. Smith's name yelled at me a lot, but never because people think I'm him. Like, I was in a deli And I ordered a sandwich, and the woman is looking at me. She's like, "Where do I know you from? Where do I know you from? I know you. I know you." And I was just sort of smiling, and she goes, "I know you. Where do I know you from?" And I didn't say anything, and she said, "Oh, I know. You're the one who comes on before Stephen A." And I said, "Yes, that's who I am." So I get a lot of that. I get a lot, especially when I was doing NBA at night, I get a lot of, "Hey, you tell Stephen A, blah, blah, blah." I always joke with Steve. I got a lot of messages for you, Steve, because people yell at me in the street. But I've never had anyone mistake me for Stephen A and me confirm it.
So, of course you haven't. So that's not a thing to do.
I really don't know exactly how I should handle this. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shaves start with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. Close shave, America. Close shave, Barbasol. Back in a flash on ESPN Radio. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast. Greeny with Mike Greenberg.
Who sung Achy Breaky Heart?
Billy Ray Cyrus.
He's a singer?
He was a country singer, but then he is Miley Cyrus's father and played her father on Hannah Montana.
So that's what I know him from.
He also was on the song Old Town Road a few years ago, which became very, very popular.
Who was?
Billy Ray Cyrus.
Old Town Road?
Yeah, with Lil Nas X. You guys haven't heard that song?
No, I have not.
I want to take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm going to ride till I can no more.
No, I don't know that one. Right. I did watch every episode of Hannah Montana. Remarkable that their idea of him being in disguise was he just put on a mustache.
This is Greeny.
There's a lot of randomness to the conversations we have on this show sometimes, aren't there? And today has been no exception. So anyway, Greeny with you here on ESPN Radio. Delighted you've been with us. We spent most of the morning on what was an incredible night in college basketball last night. Did we get the rating yet?
I still have not
seen it. I've been waiting to see it.
Me too. I don't got it.
Usually someone will post a preliminary rating by now. I think there's a lot of anticipation out there about just what the number is going to be from last night. And I think most people think it's going to be very, very high. But very high can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, I actually pulled up a list. This is from Sports Media Watch of the top 10 most watched women's basketball games of all time. The top two are both Cheryl Miller games. The 83 final, USC-Louisiana Tech, and the 86 final, Texas-USC. Both of those games did 11 million and change. Number three is LSU-Iowa last year in the national title game at 9.9 million. Now, the game last night was on ESPN. It was on cable, so I'm not exactly sure how much that will impact the rating, but I think we are likely to have a number that approaches 10 million if I just had to take a shot in the dark.
Yeah, me too. So I've been waiting to see if that would come in. I just would like, you know, I'm rooting like everybody else for it to do well, and we'll see what winds up happening. Okay, now, hilariously, just a few moments ago, we were talking about Stephen A. Smith in probably the stupidest context of all time for reasons known. Well, I don't even know why. I was about to say for reasons known only to me, but even I don't know the reasons. Someone asked me if I was Stephen A. Smith yesterday, and I said yes.
Not just someone that mattered. Someone that mattered a lot.
Woman in a doctor's office.
Yeah, I mean, like, knowing your name, fairly important when they're your doctor.
I know. I wonder if I'm now going to get Stephen A.'s medical treatment. I wonder if, like, they're going to look up his medical chart and figure out. Anyway, hopefully not. So, one way or another, and then ironically, a minute later, I receive an email from the Get Up show group saying that Stephen A. on First Take has said something that is going to be of interest to me. So let's all hear it together. Stephen A. and Shannon Sharp on First Take this morning on ESPN.
The Jets got a chance, bro. And I'm telling you right now, if you're telling me that everybody's going to be healthy, I would pick the Jets to win the AFC East this year. I really would.
You see what you did, Stephen A.? Oh, they got a chance. You know they have the lottery drawing three times a week. I got a chance. I ain't won it yet.
Did you play? Did you play? You can say that you want to. You know, you're lying.
Okay, so what point is Shannon making there? That he thinks that Stephen A.'s prediction is too weak, or that the Jets aren't that good?
He's predicting that Stephen A., his argument is couched,
yeah.
Is qualified.
Yeah.
If you're healthy, you know, that sort of thing.
Here's the question. Who should I ask this to? Bubba, I'll ask it to you. If the Jets are relatively healthy, and it's unrealistic to say that they have no injury problems all year, but if, by and large, Rodgers is healthy most of the year, the left tackle plays most of the games this year, Mike Williams is able to be a legitimate contributor on whatever level that means. Those are the three real injury concerns you have, and they aren't otherwise completely decimated by other injury. Will the Jets win the AFC East?
Yes, I could see it. I want to say yes. I mean, they were only, let's see, there were four games behind winning it last year. The fact that they got to seven wins last year is essentially a miracle. So for them, if you're telling me all those things are going to happen, Aaron's going to be there for a full year, successful offseason right now, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities. They could win it. They can get four more wins and eclipse Buffalo and Miami. It's certainly possible.
What do you think?
I think you're 100% right. Or Stephen A. is 100% right. The Jets can absolutely not only win the AFC East, they can win the whole thing. Like, there's a 2020 Buccaneers sort of ceiling on this team, which of course is winning the Super Bowl. I think, best I can tell from afar, that the offensive line depth and the quality of that position group is the one thing that could scuttle this operation, obviously. Back in 2020, Brady's five offensive linemen played 761 snaps together, the most of any five-man combo in the NFL. It was an enormous reason they were successful. Obviously, the defense was awfully good in the playoffs, but having the same five guys block for him all season long was enormous. Aaron Rodgers coming off of an Achilles at his age, to me, it is the single most important position group in the entire NFL. The Jets offensive line, if they get it right and stay healthy, the team could legitimately win the Super Bowl. If they don't, the team could legitimately miss the playoffs.
So Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets on ESPN.com, wrote, what the Jets would really like is a trade proposal from a quarterback needy team, which would allow them to acquire another pick. A handful of teams behind them, like the Vikings at 11, the Broncos at 12, and the Raiders at 13, might be motivated to move up. So to put in simpler terms what he's saying, the first three quarterbacks are going to go off the board long before the Jets consider picking. I believe the fourth will as well. I do not think J.J. McCarthy will still be there. He'll be a distant memory by the time the Jets pick at 10. But I think Bo Nix will still be there, as will Michael Penix. If someone wants to come up to 10 to draft Bo Nix, let's say Denver does or the Raiders do or someone like that, I love the idea of the Jets trading back. I think there is one superstar offensive tackle in this draft, and he's Joe Alt from Notre Dame. He's the one who is a sure thing. The next two tackles in this draft, depending on what order you want to put them in, are Talisi Fuaga and Olu Fashanu. I've heard a lot of questions about both of them. You know who I like? There's a player I like. I want you to remember this name. Troy Fatanu. He was a tackle at Washington who projects to being a guard. Let me read you my notes on him. He was named the Pac-12's Offensive Lineman of the Year as a tackle as the Huskies went all the way to the national finals, and the line won the Joe Moore Award as the best in the country. Fatanu was a two-year starter, spent five seasons in school. He'll be 24 in October. Again, he was a tackle in college who projects to go inside in the pros. He is someone who will go mid-first round.
He's much like, he reminds, as a prospect, he reminds you of Elijah Vera Tucker, who's a player the Jets did the same thing with out of USC a few years ago. And unfortunately, Vera Tucker is hurt every year, but he's an excellent player. So if the Jets could move back, get another pick, and get this kid at, I'm just making this up, the 13th, 14th, 15th pick in the draft, I think that would be an excellent way to go.
So do I. As a general rule, smart teams trade back in the draft. And the Jets, who pick at 10, don't pick again until 72. I think depth is an enormous concern for this team. It should be priority number one for Joe Douglas. If they have the opportunity to move back into the middle to back end of the first round and still draft an offensive lineman that could be an impact player from day one if need be, maybe you add a second or third round pick to sort of help fill your stable, that's what the Jets need to do. Like their coffers are not so full because of the Aaron Rodgers trade, but this is an opportunity for them to pounce on the fact that this is a quarterback-rich draft, and they're going to be teams with really, really big eyes trying to move up and get one.
Yeah, I'm 100% in on that. And no matter what, this is not a knock on the kid. Do not take the tight end. Do not take Brock Bowers at 10. He may wind up being a great player. He is not what they need. When you are all in on this season, that is not what they need to do at 10. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back in Better Than Ever tomorrow on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN, and also available wherever you get your podcasts.